Hello and welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. I hope that you're all having a wonderful Friday and are looking forward to the weekend ahead. This week's topic is about bridges. And every time I introduce a topic, I'm like, oh my God, this is just so random. People are going to think to themselves, what is she even talking about? And maybe that's the case, maybe not. Either way, the spark for this week's podcast comes from a TikTok video that I just happened to scroll through on my For You page. And it was this girl talking about living in Louisiana and the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway Bridge, which is the longest bridge over open water. And it is 24 miles long. We'll talk a little bit about it specifically, but basically her video was talking about how scary it is because essentially once you get on the bridge, you're on the bridge until you get off of it. There is no exit. There is no way to turn around. You're kind of stuck there. And I thought that sounded kind of spooky to me. And so then I looked it up and it looks terrifying. So I recently went to the beach in Florida and I had to go over a bridge to get from where I was on I-10 down to the actual beach on the Gulf Coast. And I had to go over some water. I had to go over this bridge that sort of started in the marsh. Well, obviously it started on land. And then you kind of go over this marsh and then you're just over open water for what felt like forever. I think it was maybe less than a mile, but it was still really scary for me because I just kept thinking to myself, what do you do if there's a storm? I guess you wouldn't be on the road in a storm. But either way, I don't particularly like being on bridges that are, you can't really see the shore from where you are. That freaks me out. And so her video on this bridge sparked me to go down a deep dive into bridges in general, notable bridges in general. And really, I kind of picked bridges that are spooky in some way, at least to me. So starting with the Lake Pontchartrain Causeway, New Orleans experienced growth in the 1940s and 50s, but access from the north was hindered by the lake. Basically, people were complaining because the folks on the north shore of the lake couldn't just get a straight shot to New Orleans. They had to drive all the way around the lake, and obviously that took longer than a straight line. So on August 30th, 1956, the bridge was completed after just 14 months of construction. It was finished so quickly because the engineers designed the bridge with identical repeating pieces using the theories of mass production for the first time in bridge construction. So this was really an innovative bridge at the time. And they set up the factory to build it on the north side of the bridge, or the north side of the lake, I should say, so that once the pieces were completed, they could just get barged onto the lake quickly. The piles for the bridge, so that's the concrete like pillars that are in the water holding the bridge up. Piles are hollow cylinders measuring 54 inches in diameter, which was considered revolutionary technology. Previously, most concrete piles were 24 inches and solid. Additionally, they developed a new method to manufacture the concrete piles using centrifugal force to generate a drier, more compact concrete, allowing it to achieve a higher strength, which would be nearly 10,000 PSI or pounds per square inch. Now, I read a lot about concrete, which is not something that I thought I would ever say in my life, but I went down the rabbit hole regarding concrete and I thought to myself, so I don't think it's interesting enough to include, but if you are curious, the concrete that they use is pre-stressed for bridges. So they have to do special things with the concrete that they use to build bridges because obviously they're carrying a significant load and you don't want them to break. So I looked up the weight capacity of bridges just because I was curious. And essentially, according to Google, the weight capacity depends on design, materials, and location. But according to the Federal Bridge Formula, which was established in 1974, the gross weight of a vehicle, including load, should not exceed 80,000 pounds, for example, like 18-wheelers. And single axle weight limits are 20,000 pounds. And they had some really really interesting drawings on the website, if you're curious, the federal website with this formula on it, where basically it was showing how the shorter the distance between the axles on a vehicle, so think like a box truck versus an 18-wheeler. So the wheels on a box truck are closer together front to back than they are on an 18-wheeler front to back. And so the load for the box truck is going to be pressing more heavily on the bridge because it's not getting distributed as evenly or as far apart as it would be for an 18-wheeler. So that's why they had to start establishing these load limits for vehicles on bridges, because obviously you don't want someone who is carrying too heavy of an amount of weight to collapse a bridge, basically. And this is all something, like I said, this formula was established in 1974. So it's interesting to me, we'll get into this a little bit further with another bridge, that a lot of these bridges that we see today were built, or at least a lot of the bridges that I was looking at were built in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s time frame. And it's interesting to me that when they were building these bridges, things that you think of today, like load limit and how much stress is going to be on a bridge because of that, or, you know, how the weather patterns might affect the bridge, weren't really taken into consideration. I don't really know why that is necessarily. And also, it's amazing to me to think that these engineers were building these bridges, you know, some of them nearly 100 years ago, and they're still standing. Obviously, I'm sure they have had, you know, some refurbishments happening, but the main structure of a lot of these bridges is still perfectly fine. And that, to me, says a lot about the engineers of this time period, kind of in general. And although they didn't take into account some of the things that we have to today, they still created something as sturdy as they did. So anyway, back to the Lake Pontchartrain. So by 1964, due to heavy traffic, a second parallel bridge was constructed using the same innovations and became the northbound lanes. So the original bridge is now southbound lanes, and then this newer one became the northbound lane. And then the newer side opened on May 10th, 1969, and it cost approximately $30 million to build. Then in February of 2019, a $53 million project added shoulders along the right side of each causeway so that people who got into accidents or emergency personnel would be able to get off to the side of the road. Which is crazy to me because that was literally, I think it said it was completed in 2020, so that was 5 years ago. So this bridge did not have shoulders until 5 years ago. So again, it's spooky to me. The next bridge I wanted to talk about was the Royal Gorge Bridge, because I looked up which bridge holds the most weight in the world. And while there is not a specific answer, this is one of the bridges that came up and I thought it was pretty interesting. It is located in Colorado, and the bridge spans the Royal Gorge, which was created by the Arkansas River. The project started June 5th, 1929, with 80 men constructing it in just 7 months. At the time, it was the world's highest bridge at 956 feet above the ground. Today, it's the seventh highest bridge in the world, but it's still America's highest suspension bridge. It can hold more than 2 million pounds with the 100 tons of steel that support the deck. However, it's designed for pedestrians to enjoy the view. So it was not designed for traffic or cars, you know, to be going across it. So it's just a pedestrian bridge, but it's still pretty amazing that it can hold 2 million pounds. That's a lot. In 1982, a wind cable system was installed to allow the bridge to withstand 125 mile per hour winds. So that I thought was pretty interesting, especially considering how high it is and the fact that it has not ever had a wind-related accident is pretty interesting to me, considering the next bridge that this path led me to. So the Tacoma Narrows Bridge is a bridge I'm sure you may I'm sure if you look it up, you'll recognize it because I vaguely remember seeing the video of this bridge back when I was in school. I don't remember. Maybe it was like a physics class. I'm not too sure. But it collapsed due to high winds on November 7th, 1940. If you do look up the video, it's really interesting to watch it collapse. Nobody got hurt, so it's not like morbid or anything. But it's really amazing to watch it just kind of whip around in the wind. It looks like a toy. It's incredible to see. So I highly recommend watching the video of this bridge collapsing because it's cool. It was built during the 1930s and it opened to traffic on July 1st, 1940 in Washington State, crossing the Puget Sound. It's about a mile wide channel of water. At the time, it was the third longest suspension bridge in the world, and it was designed to be the most flexible bridge ever constructed. Engineers believed it was safe, although later it was revealed they didn't properly consider the aerodynamic forces at play during strong winds. So it was designed to be flexible, but she was a little too flexible. The high winds on November 7th caused the bridge to sway so violently that at one point the elevation of the sidewalk on one side of the bridge was 28 feet above the sidewalk on the other side, which is insane. How, again, you watch the video of it shaking and torquing in the wind, and it is absolutely incredible to see. Today, the remains of the bridge are still at the bottom of Puget Sound, where they form one of the largest man-made reefs in the world. The spot was put on the National Register of Historic Places in order to protect it against salvagers. The replacement bridge opened on October 14, 1950, after more than 2 years of construction, and this time construction took into account the lessons learned from the previous collapse, and the new bridge is the fifth longest suspension bridge in the U.S. It's actually 40 feet longer than the original bridge. So not only is it longer, but again, they use the lessons learned from the previous bridge to construct this one in a way that clearly lasted much longer because she's still standing tall. So after I was looking into that bridge collapse, I thought that it would be interesting to Google the world's scariest bridges just because I wanted to see what would come up. And one of the bridges that I found is the Ashima Ohashi Bridge in Japan. This bridge has a steep incline that creates an optical illusion, making it look like it's a vertical cliff. Again, I encourage you to look up the photos of this bridge because it is insane. It literally looks like people are driving at a 90 degree straight up into the sky. It's the largest rigid frame bridge in Japan, and it's known as the roller coaster bridge due to the steep slope, standing 148 feet tall. It was built to replace a drawbridge that used to cause traffic delays and had weight restrictions for vehicles crossing the lake. It was also built to withstand earthquakes. The rigid frame structure distributes the load evenly, allowing it to withstand a magnitude 7 on the Richter scale. In case you don't know, Japan is along one of the fault lines in the Pacific, and so they experience quite a bit of earthquakes, or they can experience quite a bit of earthquakes. So making sure that this bridge could withstand those heavy vibrations was something that was really important. They built it so tall, again, because they were replacing a drawbridge, so it had to be high enough off of the ground or high enough above the water that bridges could pass freely underneath it. So that way they wouldn't have to stop traffic and then let the boats through and then start traffic again. I think it said that it could take 8 minutes for the drawbridge to actually like raise and lower, and then an additional 8 minutes for the boats to clear it. 16 minutes really doesn't seem like that much, but when you're in a like rush hour traffic situation, that's a lot of time to just be sitting idly by. And then of course you have to wait for the traffic to be at a stopping point, whether that be the ships or the cars, and it just created like a cluster right there. The central span of the bridge measures 128 feet between its two main supports, making it one of the most extended spans in the world for a concrete bridge. The actual grade is only 6.1%, but the optical illusion makes it look like cars are climbing a vertical slope before disappearing over the edge. It took 7 years to build and cost approximately $200 to $260 million. It was an expensive bridge, clearly, but it's actually really pretty. If you look at photos from the sides, you know, standing in the road, looking at it, that's when you see the optical illusion where it makes it look like it's a, you know, vertical climb. If you look at the photos of it from the side, it doesn't look quite as aggressively steep, but it's still a really pretty bridge. There's one photo that I saw of it lit up at night and with the water underneath. They designed it to be a pretty bridge in addition to being practical with its height and strength. One of the other bridges that came up as being a particularly scary bridge was the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. It is located in Maryland, and its official name is the Governor William Preston Lane Jr. Memorial Bridge, after the state governor that got the project running in 1947. However, again, everyone just knows it as the Chesapeake Bay Bridge. It spans 4.3 miles of open water, and the original bridge opened in 1952. At the time, it was the longest continuous steel structure over water in the world and the third longest bridge worldwide. A second parallel bridge opened in 1973. The older eastbound bridge is 186 feet high, while the relatively newer westbound bridge stands 200 feet above the water. People seem most afraid of the eastbound bridge because on the ascent to the bridge's highest point, a curve in the road creates the illusion that you're about to drive off the edge. Plus, the low barriers aren't solid, which allow you to see into the distance and the open water far below. There's also a lack of a shoulder, so there's no place to stop once you're on the bridge. Bad weather can be scary. Out in the middle of the water, the highest sections are exposed and often hit by storms. Visibility can become so poor that land is no longer visible. Fear of this bridge is so common. There are drive-over services where you pay someone to drive your car for you. I read an article that said they charge $40 to drive people over the bridge. So literally, you stop at the foot of the bridge and you hand your keys to someone who works at the service, give them money, and then you get in your passenger seat and they drive you over the bridge and then give you your keys back. What's more funny is they say that they, like in the busy season, they do like 10 to 20 rides a day, which I guess if you're doing 20 rides a day, they said they charge $40. So 20 rides a day times $40, that's $800 a day. So let's say you do it 5 days a week. No, they probably do it 7 days a week. So let's multiply that by seven times about 4 weeks a month. That's $22,000 a month. Just to drive people, $22,000 just to drive people across a bridge. That's insane. 4.3 miles. It's less than 5 miles, and you're making $22,000 a month to drive them over this 5 mile bridge. That's wild. While accidents do happen, the bridge is rarely closed. However, after the collapse of Baltimore's Key Bridge in March 2024, concerns were raised about the Bay Bridge. It's on the same shipping route, and its aging pilings are only surrounded by wooden barriers that would do little if a huge container ship hit one. As of the time of me reading the article, they didn't specify if any changes or if there had been any proposed changes to the structure to make it a little bit stronger. I don't really know what the outcome as far as the shipping goes after that bridge disaster in Baltimore. And I remember, it's funny, so I had forgotten about it until I was reading about the Chesapeake Bay Bridge when they mentioned the Baltimore Bridge, and that was last year. It's crazy to think that was a year ago. I'm sure a lot of people had already forgotten about it. And I remember when it happened and seeing it on the news, and it just didn't seem real to me because you don't think of bridges collapsing nowadays unless it's, you know, extreme hurricane, like forces of nature type thing. But for an accident like the one that happened in Baltimore, it's so tragic. And then you think of places where they have these really famous bridges, and I wonder if there's, I'm sure there's regulations as far as like shipping goes I'm thinking of places, you know, like New York or London or, you know, up and down the coast, the East Coast of the U.S. There's a lot of places that have shipping lanes, obviously, because they're on the coast. And then because it's a coastal area, there's bound to be a bridge here and there. And so it's interesting to think about how, what kind of impact that had on shipping and bridges. Because again, going back to when these bridges, a lot of these bridges were built, like the Chesapeake Bridge opened in 1952. And so if you think about our container ships today, and how I'm sure they're much larger today than they were in the 50s. And so you think about how bridges that were built then were not built to modern standards of size, really. And so I wonder how that has affected bridges. And, you know, that's one of those things, at least for me anyway, it's not really something I think too much about. You know, you don't really think about the logistics of shipping. At least, again, I don't. I really, when I envision shipping, I think more of, you know, open water in the ocean, these big, like, cargo ships. But you don't, I don't think about the logistics of them actually coming to port and how important it is for safety, really, in general, you know, when you're thinking about coming into land. And, you know, that gets me thinking, you know, we did that episode on Lake Michigan and all the shipping on the lakes, the Great Lakes in the U.S. and how precarious that can be. And, you know, the Great Lakes, if you start in Lake Michigan, you can make your way to the Atlantic Ocean. You have to drive. You have to sail through, you know, the lakes and a couple rivers and stuff, but you can make your way to the ocean. And that's what they did, you know, when they were shipping furs and all the goods that they were stealing from the natives, you know. It's just not something that I don't think we think too much about. It's just how things get from point A to point B. And again, how important infrastructure is. Now I'm going off on like a way another tangent. I'm going off on a completely different tangent, but just like the infrastructure in general, and especially in the United States, like people talk about the aging infrastructure of the U.S., but really, like, think about it. All these bridges that we just talked about were built at least 50 years ago, most of them more than. And so you think about how much load that these structures have been carrying for how long, you know, and just how important it is to maintain the infrastructure in a country and how huge America is, you know, especially just in general, and how much that really entails infrastructure wise, you know, roads, utilities, things like bridges, that sort of thing. It's kind of wild if you really think about it. Maybe that's just me. I do want to mention that bridges are, there is a real fear of bridges. My mom is terrified of bridges. She has been for as long as I can remember. She doesn't like driving over them. And if she has to, she refuses to look out the side. She refuses to look over the side because it's just too scary for her. So she will like white knuckle her way over a bridge. And, you know, we used to tease her about it when we were younger. But I will say, as I've gotten older, bridges kind of freak me out too. So I get it now. Sorry, Mom. So, in conclusion, how do you feel about going over bridges? Although not all bridges are quite as scary as some that I mentioned today, and most are probably perfectly safe in most conditions. I think pedestrian bridges are scarier, honestly. I immediately fear that I'll lose the ability to walk straight and end up falling over the edge when I'm on a pedestrian bridge. I really don't like them. I'm also not a fan of heights, so I'm sure that's a factor in my fear of these pedestrian bridges, but at any rate, bridges are a clear indication of how cool engineering can be or how scary it can be, depending on your perspective. And with that, I wish you all a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be seeing you next Friday. Bye!